Yes. Now, I didn't actually read Heinz Dietrich's book until sometime later. But it is quite clear that this man is one of the main theoreticians of what? Not of the Bolivarian movement, not of the workers and peasants, not of the revolutionary youth, the main theoretician of the bureaucracy, of the reformists, of the right wing of the Bolivarian movement, who are doing everything in their power to put the brakes on the revolution, to stop the revolution. These ladies and gentlemen, who, by the way, have got very comfortable positions, don't be under any illusions about this. There is corruption in Venezuela, there is colossal corruption in Venezuela. And this is something which the rank and file workers and peasants are very bitter about. That's not too strong a word. That they talk about revolution and they talk about socialism, but there's a big gap between the theory and the practice. For example, the question arises, you talk about socialism, you talk about revolution, why have we got still the old mayors in the town halls, the old bureaucrats in government offices, the old police chiefs, the old army chiefs, the old church hierarchy? In other words, all the old forces of the old society remain in place, or a large section of them remain in place. And this is a central problem. Let me put this to you. Unless this problem is resolved, and pronto, the future of the Bolivarian Revolution is in very serious danger. There's no question about this. Now, of course, people like Heinz Dietrich, is not him alone. There are many others, very similar types, have no interest whatsoever in socialism, in revolutionary change. They have a profound distrust of working people, of ordinary working people, who are the basis of the revolution. The real heroes of the Venezuelan revolution are the masses themselves. It was the masses that saved the revolution on at least three occasions. By the way, with no party, no leadership, no program, no clear ideas, only their own class instincts, their sincerity, their heart, their soul, their blood. They saved the revolution. They saved it from the coup d'etat. Chavez made a mistake. I've told him so, and I will say so again. He made a mistake. That after when the coup collapsed, and this is the tragedy, this is the significance of leadership. When the coup collapsed in April of 2002, they could have taken power like that, without firing a shot, with no deaths, with no bloodshed, with no civil war, peacefully, yes. My friends, it is entirely possible, it was entirely possible, to have carried through a socialist revolution in Venezuela peacefully. Because who would have resisted once they collapsed? They all collapsed, the army generals, they ran like frightened rabbits. They ran like rats into their holes. Nobody could have stopped the revolution if they would have carried it to an end at that point. All that would have been required is to pass a law saying, right, okay, anyone that participated in this coup d'etat is expropriated and imprisoned, but above all, expropriated. The land, the banks, because they were all involved in this, and the big industries were not interested in the small shops, leave them alone. It wasn't done. Instead of that, President Chavez tried to negotiate. He tried to dialogue. He tried to be reasonable, encouraged by people like Heinz Dietrich. Oh, no, mustn't go too far. You must convince the middle class. You must convince people and so on. He tried this. What was the result? Did the opposition say, oh, what a democratic president we've got. What a nice man. Here's a man you can talk to. Let's sit around a table and drink a glass of rum and solve the problems. Is that what they said? No, my friends, that's not what they said. What they said was the opposite. They said, this is a weak president. This is a weak government. Let's go for it. Let's go for the juggler, which they did within less than 6 months. There was another counter-revolutionary attempt. The boss's sabotage, which the press in Britain disgracefully described, was a general strike. Where's the general strike? There was no general strike. It was a deliberate closure of the oil installations by the management in order to sabotage the economy and create the conditions for another coup. They failed. Why did they fail? Because the Venezuelan working class, yet again, showing a very high level of consciousness, without any party, no leadership, spontaneously seized the factories, seized the installations, and began to run them under workers' control. And by the way, what a surprise. They found that they ran the installations more efficiently than what they were before under the bureaucrats and the bosses. Here again, a mistake was made. If Chavez had been a Marxist, if he would have been consistent, they could have finished the job when that particular counter-revolutionary coup collapsed. He didn't do that. Encouraged by people, by the reformists, by the Heinz Dietrich, again he tried the same, offering a hand of friendship. Now let's discuss, let's negotiate, let's dialogue, we're all Venezuelans together, and so on. What was the result? A third counter-revolutionary attempt in the referendum, the recall referendum. Again, they were defeated only by the marvelous movement of the masses from below. So what I'm saying to you is that the main motor force for the Venezuelan revolution has been the masses, the workers, the peasants, the millions of poor people, the women, the youth. That's the real strength of the revolution. That's what saved the revolution up to the present time. And this culminated in the marvelous vote in December 2006, where Chavez got the biggest vote of any politician in the history of Venezuela. And here was another opportunity. By this time, by the way, Chavez had drawn the correct conclusion that we have to finish the job. We must go on to socialist measures now. Socialism means, if it means anything, it must mean the nationalization of the land, the banks, and the big industry under the democratic control and management of the working class. But of course that wasn't done. It wasn't done. And as a result of that, we now saw a defeat, not a major defeat, but a significant defeat in the referendum that took place last December, a few months ago. And what does that show? What that shows, comrades, is that the masses are beginning to get tired. Is anyone surprised at this? I'm not surprised. After 10 years, what are you talking about? It's a miracle that there's any movement left. After 10 years, people begin to get tired. They get tired. And now, of course, with it, there's the sabotage of the capitalists. There are shortages of food, shortages of all kinds of basic things, corruption, mismanagement. And by the way, these scoundrels in the West, they talk about dictatorship in Venezuela and so repression in Venezuela. Do you know how many people that were involved in the coup d'etat of 2002, do you know how many of them are in jail in Venezuela at the present? Not one. Not one. This is like-minded. This is like-minded. If they ever got power back into their hands, you think they were going to act in that way? In relation to our people, I tell you that they would not. But to go back to the question, where Dietrich has come into this equation is by writing books, and he writes many books and many articles, which he puts forward the idea that it's left-wing, it's socialist, the socialism of the 21st century. But if you read what he writes very carefully, you have to plow through a lot of nonsense. It's a bit. I'm exhausted. I've spent 12 months. I feel as if I just spent a trip in the Amazon jungle, you know, with a machete. Only instead of cutting my way through whatever it is they cut their way through in the jungle, I've been cutting my way through unreadable prose and all kinds of ridiculous nonsense. This man writes about everything. He writes about everything under the sun and a few things besides. He writes about the universe, about philosophy, about history, about economics, you name it. You name it. And therefore I was compelled, if you're going to answer this, these ideas, you must answer them properly, I was compelled to pursue him through this vision. Now the advantage of that from our point of view as Marxists is this. It's similar to a book, perhaps some of you may have heard of this book, it's a famous book, which was written by Engels over 100 years ago, called Anti-Düring. I was sorely tempted to call this book Anti-Dietrich, but I refrained from doing so, Instead of that, we're going to call it reformism and revolution. Marxism and the socialism of the 21st century, replied to Heinz Dietrich. Düring was identical, it was comical. To read that book now, to read Engels' book, you think it was written yesterday. The same ideas, the same nonsensical ideas, utopian ideas. In a nutshell, I mean, it's difficult to compress this, but what are the ideas I'm referring to? Well, the first idea is, one has to ask oneself, what is the central problem of the revolution? Not just in Venezuela, but in Britain or anywhere else. The central question is the question of property. There cannot be any talk of socialism in Britain or anywhere else unless the land, the banks, and the big industries are in the hands of the state, and the state is in the hands of the people. That's the point. The state must be in the hands of the people. In Venezuela, that is not the case. It's true that Chavez has carried through nationalizations. They recently nationalized a big steel company, Sidor, which is very good, which we applaud. That's good. Yes, it's very good, but it's not enough. And the reason that it's not enough is this. If you mess around, if you tinker with the mechanism of the market economy, if you partially nationalize, what you will do is that you will destroy the mechanism of the market economy, or you'll damage it, such that there'll be an outflow of capital, there'll be a, what do they call it? A flight of capital. It's already taking place in Venezuela. The capitalists will stop investing. They will close their factories. They will withdraw the food, which is already occurring, causing shortages and so on. And you'll have the worst of all possible worlds. You can't do half a revolution any more than you can be half pregnant. You have to go the whole hog. Either you are or you ain't pregnant. Either you carry through a revolution or you don't carry through a revolution. If you try to adopt half measures, then you'll get the worst of all possible worlds. That's already occurring, and the danger is this. If that were to happen, and it is happening, you will disappoint and demoralize the masses to the extent that they cease to respond. They cease to participate. Once that occurs, once the reaction, and the reactionaries there are quite ferocious people, once they see that the mood of the masses is cooling off, and they saw that in December, they will counterattack with all the forces at their disposal. Now, what does Dietrich put forward? Well, he says, well, first of all, he's opposed to nationalization. He says that socialism of the 21st century can be effective and must be effective without touching private property. Now then, you got your heads around that? You understand what I'm saying? In other words, he says you can have socialism while allowing the oligarchy, the big landowners, the bankers, they can keep the banks, they can keep the capitalists. So what do we do? Well, he says, we organize cooperatives, small cooperatives. Well, of course, I'm not against cooperatives. I'm in favor of cooperatives. As a matter of fact, the cooperatives can play a very important role in a planned economy once the working class has taken power into its hands. But if you try to operate a cooperative system within the market economy, in other words, that Ford's and IBM and the big banks and so on, they control the most profitable dynamic sections of the economy, and a handful of enterprises are run on cooperative lines. Well, we've got a long history of this. There's a long history of this. You cannot have an island of socialism within a sea of capitalism. It doesn't work. If you try that, what will happen is that most of these cooperative enterprises will end up being run on capitalist lines. They'll be compelled to adopt the laws of the market. The people in charge of the cooperatives will begin to get privileges and high pay and all the rest of it. They'll begin to sack workers and force them to work harder because we must compete, no? It's the market, we must compete. We must compete with Sainsbury's and Tesco's, and therefore I'm afraid we're going to have to sack you, and you must work 10 hours more, and you must take a pension cut. How does the working class benefit from this? And this is happening in Venezuela. All this nonsense about, oh, cooperatives and the Bolivarian experiment, it's nonsense. It cannot work unless they take power into their own hands. But of course, there's an obstacle here, as I'm sure you realize, and that's the state. It isn't just the people we're up against here. It's not just the bankers and capitalists and landlords. It's also the police, the army, the judges, the judiciary, the prisons, the lawyers, what we call this, the bureaucrats, what we call the state. Now, Karl Marx made a very interesting observation, which, by the way, he didn't suck this out of his tongue. He didn't invent the theory of the state. He drew the conclusions, the necessary conclusions, from the actual experience of the working class in the Paris Commune in France of 1871. And the conclusion is this. It is impossible, not difficult, it is impossible for the working class just to lay its hands on the existing state apparatus, the existing bureaucrats, judges, army generals, and create socialism through the existing state. Now, is this idea very difficult? I want you to think about it concretely. You'll soon see that it makes sense. Does anyone in their right mind believe that it is possible, for example, in Britain, to carry through a socialist transformation of society through, while keeping the governor of the Bank of England and the army chiefs and the police chiefs and the bureaucrats and the civil servants? No. These are people from another class representing other interests. In Venezuela, it's even clearer. It is simply an impossibility for Hugo Chavez to carry out all that the man obviously wants to carry out while resting on the old apparatus which he's inherited from the past of the old bureaucrats, army chiefs, police chiefs, judges, lawyers, functionaries of all sorts. And therefore, the question is that there must be sabotage. There is sabotage. Chavez himself has admitted to this. I know for a certain fact, I've seen it with my own eyes. It's happened in front of me. I will not go into the details. It's not necessary, but I've seen it happen. It affected myself, as a matter of fact, that the president issued a direct order to a minister and a bureaucrat, and nothing was done about it. It was just sabotage. That's just one example. There are many examples. It is well known that President Chavez is surrounded by an iron ring of so-called secretaries, advisors. God preserve us from these advisors. I mean, I've been in the Palace of Miraflores. I've discussed with the president. I wouldn't get in now. No, there's an actual conspiracy to prevent the president from having any access to the left wing, to the masses, to the workers, because of the effect that would have on him. This is where these theoreticians come in, the reformists, who try to provide some kind of an excuse, some kind of a so-called justification. The most comical thing about these people, there's two comical things. I'll have a lot of fun when I go to Caracas. I'll challenge Dietrich to a debate. I wonder if he will accept. I don't think he will. I'd be mad if he does. But there's two comical things. The first comical thing is, these people regard themselves as realists. Really comical. They argue in favor of class peace. Oh no, we must have reconciliation, you see. Workers must be friendly to the capital. They actually argue that under socialism of the 21st century, there will be capitalists, there will be private factory owners, but they will only accept the wages of equivalence, as they say. In other words, they'll accept the wages like anybody else. The only problem, I think that Bill Gates would have something to say about that, don't you, Mick? I think he'd have something to say if you end up, Mr. Gates, we're now living under socialism of the 21st century, and therefore you can keep Microsoft, but you'll only get 100 quid a week. What do you think he would say, Will? I think he would be somewhat displeased at the prospect. But no, this is realism. Whereas we Marxists, we're not realistic, you see. But they're realists. It's the realism, as I've said many times, it's the realism of a man who tries to teach a man-eating tiger to eat salads instead of meat. Have you ever tried that, Nicholas? You try it? You should try it sometime. See what happens. Try it, you know. Try to teach a tiger how to swim. I mean, are there any vegetarians present? Yes. Yeah, there we are. Melanie, go to the zoo, try and teach a tiger to be a vegetarian. What do you think would happen? Well, I don't think you'd have much success in persuading the tiger, but you'd end up in his belly right enough. It is nonsense. Where's the realism about this? There's a class. Don't these people understand? There's a class struggle taking place in society. This is a serious question. It's not a joke. It's not a game of chess. It's not a polite little thing or a football match. We've got a referee that tells you what the result is going to be. No, 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 no. This is a serious struggle between two. And at the end of the day, one class must win and the other class must lose. And all I'm concerned is that our class should not lose, because the consequences will be extremely serious. The other amusing thing is that they regard it, they always talk about new ideas. What they say, oh no, Marxism, no, no, Marxism's old ideas. Oh, you heard this before? Am I boring you? Yeah. Old ideas. These are old ideas, you know. These are ideas from the 19th century. Why not have some new ideas? Let's have new socialism. This is what they always. Now, I'll make my personal position absolutely clear in case any of you got any doubts about this. I've been a defender of Marxism since I was a boy, which was a long time ago, at least 5 years. A lot longer than that. I've been defending Marxism all my conscious life, and I'm firmly convinced, that every day I'm more convinced, that the fundamental ideas of Marxism are absolutely valid and correct. I'm quite confident of this. However, let me say this to you. If one of you would now stand up and say, now look, Alan, all this is wrong, I have a better alternative, which is this, and would produce the necessary arguments and could prove to me that indeed they had a superior alternative, rest assured that I would not only listen to them, I would abandon Marxism tomorrow and I would accept whatever alternative was on the table. But let me tell you something else. After all these years of painstakingly looking through this propaganda, this literature, and so on, I've yet to find a single new idea among all these ladies and gentlemen, that Tony Neri in Italy and so on, you know, Heinz Dier, oh, new ideas, new. You look at these new ideas. I'll tell you what, I think I've proved it in the book. I've proved it to the extent of showing where this gentleman stole his ideas from. From an English utopian by the name of Bray. That's a separate question. All these people who talk, oh, new ideas, new socialism. It's just one commonsensical obligation. Is something necessarily better because it's new, you tell me? Think about it. I mean, would you rather have a nice, new, sparkling television that does not work when you switch it on? Or would you rather have the old battered old set which you go, which actually does do the business? Which would you prefer? Something is not necessarily better because it is new. Some old things are quite good. I say that because I'm quite old myself. Yeah. Some old things are not too bad. Let's take, for example, the wheel. Now, the wheel is very old. How old is the wheel? It's very old. How old is the wheel then, Mauro?
5,000 years.
5,000? No, it's longer than that, I'm sure. It must be longer than that. It's as old as the cough, as the Spaniards were saying. It's as old. Tan viejo que el tos. It's a very old thing. Yeah, but it works, doesn't it? More or less. I mean, the way they go around, they do the business. No particular complaint. Now, what would you say about someone that come along and said, well, no, 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 the wheel is old-fashioned now. We've had enough of wheels. The wheel's too old. Let's have a 21st century wheel. A new wheel. You know, what sort of wheel would that be? It might be square, maybe, or triangular, or whatever it is, it wouldn't work particularly well. No, 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 no. Comrades, we do not need to reinvent the wheel. This is pure demagogy. This is cheap demagogy. Oh, Marxism, old-fashioned, we need something new. We do not need to reinvent the wheel. We have a perfectly adequate wheel in the form of the basic ideas of Marxism, which, frankly, let's be quite... Say what I think. The fundamental ideas of Marxism, maybe this or that detail would have to be changed. But the fundamental ideas of Marxism are still the same, still as correct as what they were 150 years ago. And that's a fact. I can demonstrate that, but that's a subject for another discussion. Whereas the so-called new ideas are not new at all. I've gone to great length analyzing in this book, which has not yet appeared, but it will soon. Rest assured, believe me, trust me, I'm a Marxist. you know, the book will appear. I've gone to great trouble to show that in every single case, all these so-called new theories are ancient theories going back. They're pre-Marxian ideas. What they are actually is it's a rehash, it's a regurgitation of the old ideas of the, what we call the utopian socialists, of Robert Owen and other people, except that they were great people in their day. They were genuine pioneers, where these people are just, as Engels once put it, they're flea crackers. People are entirely superficial and of no particular value whatsoever. Anyway, listen, I think I've said sufficient at least to pose a few questions. Just one final shot. You see, the real heroes, the real protagonist of the Bolivarian Revolution is the masses themselves. I think some of you have been to Venezuela. Will has been. You've seen these guys. You've seen these men and women. Marvelous people. Marvelous people. And actually on a very high level of consciousness. What you haven't seen, I don't think, well, I've had the regrettable experience when I've been to Venezuela, I've had to debate with these people. Is these absolute scoundrels. I could use a stronger term, but we're in polite company this evening. These absolute rascals, these renegades, ex-communists, ex-Marxists, and so ex-Trotskyists, who speak with absolute contempt. I've heard them. They speak with absolute contempt about the workers. They have a contempt for ordinary people. I remember a few years ago I was in this conference in Carabobo, where there were hundreds of the most advanced workers, oil workers, and so on, people that had run workers' control. Great, fantastic, the salt of the earth. And this reptile from Argentina, what was his name? I can't remember. Norbert, I think, I can't remember. He was a scoundrel, I can't remember his name. He's a damn scoundrel anyway. If this is recorded, I repeat, you're a damn scoundrel. Eres un sinvergüenza. Actually had the bare cheek in this marvelous meeting where the oil workers were asked me actually to attend to put forward the idea of workers' control. They were interested in workers' control. This scoundrel was saying, ah, yes, but we all know that the working class hasn't got sufficient level of consciousness to run society or to run factories. I was scandalized, and he fell off the chair. I gave him the answer that he deserved in front of all the workers. You see, this is what we have to combat. Unfortunately, what's happening here, and it's happening in Britain, that's the meaning of new labour. It's happening in Britain. Since the collapse of the Soviet Union, there's been a period in which the workers, not because of the Soviet Union, it's for other reasons, there hasn't been a big movement of the class. And under those circumstances, the pressure of the middle class, or the petty bourgeois, or the academics, or alien ideas, bears very heavily on the movement itself. And this is a damnable state of affairs. That's the meaning of new labour. What on earth has new labour got to do with the Labour Party or the trade unions or socialism? Nothing whatsoever. These are infiltrators. These are the real interests that are destroying the Labour Party and how they're destroying the Labour Party. And therefore, comrades and friends, I'll just finish on that note. It is incumbent upon us to lead the counterattack against these nefarious influences on the labour movement. And the best way that we can do that is, first of all, to prepare ourselves to understand. The purpose of this book, by the way, is not to unmask Heinz Dietrich. Possibly at this late stage he doesn't need much unmasking. In the referendum he sided with General Badwell, who was a reactionary. The main purpose of the book is to explain the basic ideas of Marxism, to show the superiority of Marxism and revolutionary socialism against all brands of reformism and revisionism. That is our task. That's our main task. That's what sets us apart from the rest of the movement. I'll just end on this idea. At this moment in time, we are attracting, our international is attracting, the best elements of the working class, the youth, Bolivarians, Irish left-wing Republicans, Cuban revolutionaries, vegetarians, even the odd vegetarian, God bless them, are looking towards this organization, looking towards this. Why? Is it because we're a huge organization? We're not a huge organization. We're quite a small organization. What power of attraction do we have? There's only one thing. It's the power of ideas, comrades. The power of ideas which attract people. And therefore, It's up to all of you, particularly the younger comrades, to conquer these marvelous ideas of Marxism for yourselves and lead the counterattack, re-establishing the genuine traditions of Marxism in the labor movement in Britain and on a world scale.